open and leaking. They lit out for the mall and didn't come back until supper time. It was assumed he'd fallen or jumped. He was a troubled boy, the child of drug addicts, with probable fetal alcohol syndrome and poor impulse control. No one even questioned where they were. But Danny knew what Lauren had done, and for a few days, she held it over her, threatening to tell whenever she felt like it. Danny left, no more than a week after Lauren pushed the boy off the roof. She stuffed her things in a garbage bag and said, "See ya, loser." And then she was out of the house, slamming the door behind her. Lauren didn't know if she'd gone back to her parents or to another foster home. Lauren wanted to go home. She hadn't thought she would be there long, but it dragged on, week after week, until she wondered if her parents would ever ask to get her back, and no one told her anything. Lauren's rage grew and grew. When Lauren was finally reclaimed, her mother came for her alone. Her father was gone. She never saw him again. Her mother took her home, and things went back to normal, with Lauren doing whatever she wanted. A couple of years later, her mother remarried. Her stepfather adopted her, and she changed her name to his. And then Danny showed up at Mitchell's Inn. That night, Lauren didn't actually take her sleeping pills. She waited until Ian was asleep, and then, when all was quiet except for the bluster and rattle of the wind, she slipped out of her own room and padded quietly down to the second floor and knocked lightly on Dana's door. She was all alone in the hall. Everyone was asleep, the storm crashing outside their windows. She didn't have to knock twice. Dana answered the door, looking guardedly at her. Lauren said that they should talk. Dana glanced back at the sleeping form of her fiancé, slipped the room key into the pocket of her dressing gown, and stepped into the hall without a word. She followed Lauren down the stairs to the landing and then stopped. "Wait," she said, her voice low. "We can talk here." And she stopped as if she wouldn't go any farther. So, at the top of the stairs, Lauren looked Dana in the eye and said, "We need to clarify a couple of things." Dana stared, her eyes wide, the same way she'd stared at Lauren in the dining room when she made the crack about someone falling off the roof. They had a fraught, shared history. The only question was, what happened now? A cool, blank expression settled over Dana's face. "What is it exactly that you want to clarify?" she asked. And then she simpered and said, "Oh, wait, I know. You want to be sure I'm not going to tell anybody that you're a murderer." "Shut up, Danny," Lauren snapped, her voice low. "Don't think you can push me around anymore. Things have changed." Dana snorted. "I don't think they've changed that much. I think I've still got the upper hand here, given what I know about you."
"But I don't think you want Matthew to find out about your past either. Am I right?"
"Oh, I don't know. My past may be sad, but it's not criminal," Dana said. Lauren reached out and grabbed Dana's robe and yanked at it. There, over Dana's left breast, was the small telltale tattoo, a viper.
"You didn't get rid of this?" Lauren almost laughed. "You can get those removed, you know."
Dana looked at her and spat, her voice low, familiar. "You always were a little sociopath. What are you going to do? Are you going to push me too?" And with one sudden, violent thrust, Lauren pushed Dana down the stairs. Dana fell clumsily to the bottom, her descent muffled by the thick carpet. She let out one short scream that panicked Lauren. She froze, but she was committed now. Dana lay completely still at the bottom of the stairs. Lauren had only moments before others might come running. She ran lightly down the staircase. At the bottom, she felt Dana's pulse still beating in the soft curve of her throat. She grabbed a fistful of Dana's shiny hair
and pulled up her head and smashed it as hard as she could with all her rage against the edge of the stair. Lauren's heart was pounding violently. She looked up toward the top of the staircase, expecting someone to come at any moment. Someone must have heard the scream. She was getting her story ready, but still no one came. She felt again for a pulse. Dana was dead. Glancing around, certain that no one had seen her, but not wanting to run into anyone who might have heard something, Lauren ran quietly along the back hall and made her way up the back staircase to the third floor and let herself back into her room. Ian was sound asleep. She'd killed her. She'd killed Danny, the one person who knew what she'd done all those years ago, and all she felt was relief. And to know that she killed her before she could marry a rich man and have everything she ever wanted was especially satisfying. They would think Dana fell down the stairs. Lauren crawled back into bed and lay awake all night thinking about what she'd done. She felt no remorse. But as the long night wore on, she started to worry. It had all happened so fast. She worried that Dana might have already said something to Matthew about her, that they might be able to tell it wasn't an accident, that Dana wasn't really dead. Finally, she rose very early in the morning, having not slept at all, and crept downstairs before anyone else. She went quietly, careful to wake no one. Her heart was pounding as if it had grown to fill her entire chest. She stood on the landing at the top of the stairs and looked with cold relief down at Dana, so clearly dead. She swept down the stairs and bent over her and confirmed that she was dead as a stone. She was so relieved she almost laughed. And then she let out her unholy scream. People came running then, and she made sure they found her feeling for a pulse in case the police found traces of her touch. She hoped it looked like an accident, and if anyone thought it didn't, there was Matthew, the obvious suspect. She thought she was in the clear. But then David, the attorney, had suggested that it wasn't an accident at all, that it was murder. Still, she thought she might be all right. She thought they might think Matthew did it. And even if they didn't, there was nothing to pin it on her. She was certain they wouldn't find the connection between her and Danny. But then, after lunch, she found the note in her book. The book she'd left in the lobby after breakfast. She took the book back upstairs with her after lunch and opened it and saw the small slip of paper inside, not folded, with her bookmark. And written on it, in big block capitals, in an obvious attempt to disguise the handwriting, was, "I saw what you did to Dana." She felt her heart jump in her chest like someone had jolted it with electricity. Someone had seen her. The note was unsigned, but she'd seen Candace in the lobby with the book in her hand, and she'd put it back down in a hurry. It had to be her. Was she going to try to blackmail her? Lauren thought uneasily about the hotel, how someone could have been hidden behind a chair in an alcove, how she might have been seen or heard after all, how rash she had been, how cocky to take a quick glance around and assume that no one had been there. But Candace had been watching. She must have been. And now Candace was going to try to blackmail her. The bitch. But Lauren was not the kind of person to be blackmailed. She knew what she had to do. It didn't bother her to kill, not if it was necessary. She's always been able to do whatever is necessary. She's different from other people. She's always known this, ever since she was a little girl. She has also known the importance of hiding such a fact, and she's been clever enough not to have been discovered. It gives her a certain freedom that other people seem to lack. She can do things that they can't, but she's learned how to hide it by watching what other people do and pretending to be like them. After finding the note, she told Ian she wanted a bit of time to herself and went to the small sitting room on the third floor with her book. She knew she couldn't confront Candace in the library. It was too risky. Candace would probably come up to her room at some point. She'd already noticed that Candace had been wearing a silk scarf around her neck that morning. After a while, she heard a sound in the hall. She got up from her seat by the window where the light was good enough to read and moved quietly to the door and looked out. It was Candace, unlocking the door to her room across the hall. Candace opened the door and went inside, leaving the door open. Lauren crept down the corridor toward the open door. She looked quickly up and down the hall. No one was there. Candace was standing at the desk, her back turned to her. Lauren wasn't going to negotiate. There was only one way to deal with a blackmailer. It was easy to sneak up behind Candace, her feet sinking noiselessly into the carpet. She quickly grabbed both ends of the scarf around Candace's neck and pulled with all her strength. She didn't let go until she was sure. She let Candace slump to the floor. Once Lauren was absolutely certain she was dead, she left, using her sleeve to close the door behind her. And then she retraced her steps to the sitting room, where she took up her book again. Problem solved. And then she had another idea. Checking that no one was coming, she slipped across the corridor and, picking the lock, a skill she'd learned as a troubled teenager, slipped quietly into the empty room at the end of the hall, across from Gwen and Riley's room. She had to be very quiet so that they didn't hear her. She messed up the bed a bit, made it look like it had been slept in. She went into the bathroom and, taking a towel, turned on the faucet and sprinkled some water on the sink. Then she slipped carefully out of the room and returned to the sitting room feeling rather clever. She was sure no one had seen her this time. She thought it would end there. When Candace's body was discovered, she found it easy to dissimulate, to pretend a horror, a fear she did not feel. She behaved like the others, mirroring their emotions like a chameleon. She's been doing this all her life. It was easy. They'd all crowded around Candace's room, messing up the murder scene. She deliberately bent down over Candace and made a show of touching her in front of everyone, trying to loosen the scarf, just in case, so she wouldn't have to worry about trace evidence. But by then, she'd already realized that she'd made a terrible mistake. It was when they'd returned from the ice house, before Candace's body had even been discovered. Bradley had gone off to the library to look for her. Lauren had stood in front of the reception desk and reached across, using her iPhone to search for a pen. She wanted to do a crossword by the light of the oil lamp. Her eyes fell on a small white notepad with paper the same size as the disturbing note in her book. She held the light closer. She could see the faint imprint of block letters. Even upside down, she could make out the words "Saw" and "Dana" clearly enough. It was Bradley's desk. She'd never seen his father or anyone else behind the desk. Bradley might have written the note and put it in her book. Maybe Candace had nothing to do with it. It might have been Bradley who'd seen her kill Dana. She quickly grabbed a pen and turned away from the desk, her heart pounding in her chest. Still, she thought, settling down and pretending to work on a crossword, Candace may have seen the note. "I saw what you did to Dana, inside the book, which was in her hand. And Lauren told her the book was hers. It was probably just as well that Candace was dead, Snoopy bitch. But Bradley, he must be the one who'd seen her." Later, after Candace was found, she realized that Bradley must be afraid that she had also killed Candace. She thought that maybe he'd lost his nerve, was too afraid now to approach her and ask for money. He knew what she'd done. She knew she had to kill him. When Riley ran outside into the dark and Bradley followed, she saw her opportunity. She grabbed her coat. Her leather gloves were inside the pockets. Ian was with her, but she urged him to go after Riley quickly, pretending to struggle with her boots. Alone on the porch in the dark, She picked up the boot scraper and slipped quietly in the direction she'd seen Bradley take. When she finally came upon him, she let her rage take over. She struck him with everything she had. Then she froze in the night, listening, worried that someone had heard him fall. But it was too windy to hear much of anything. No one came. She could just hear, faintly, Gwen calling for Riley, panic in her voice. Lauren stayed in a crouch and moved away from Bradley, abandoning the boot scraper by his body. She headed for the other side of the hotel, far away from the body. Soon after, she saw the light appear at the front door and saw David and Matthew coming outside to join them. When she heard the shouting, she made her way over to where she'd left Bradley dead. But then things didn't go the way they were supposed to. David was there, holding the fading flashlight, Gwen beside him. She saw James hovering over Bradley, and she tried to go to him, to offer help, to check Bradley's pulse, to see if he was really dead. But David wouldn't let her near him. He stopped her. He wouldn't let her go to Bradley, even when she pummeled his chest and sobbed. She thought she seemed pretty convincing, but she hadn't been able to get near the body. He wouldn't let her help carry Bradley inside, either. She wondered then if David was on to her. It was unfortunate that she'd had to reveal the truth about her and Ian, that they hadn't been together that afternoon after all. She'd undermined him, suggested he was the killer without looking like she was doing it. It was lucky, that lie about his brother. She loved Ian as much as it was possible for her to love anyone, but ultimately, he was disposable. It was necessary. She would find someone else. Of course, they have no motive. She's not worried they will be able to find the connection between her and Dana. They'd been in the same group home for only a couple of weeks. People came and went there in a constant, sad procession, with their pitiful plastic garbage bags holding all their worldly possessions. They were in foster care, not in the criminal system. And it was in another state. Lauren's life since has been a clean slate. She's never been caught for anything she's done. She's been so careful. She touched Dana in front of everyone. That's why her DNA will probably be on her. Candace, too. If they find trace evidence of her, it will be meaningless. And Bradley? She'd been wearing gloves, and there were so many of them around him, and they'd moved him. The evidence must be hopelessly contaminated. But they must have something on her, she thinks anxiously. Something definitive. Maybe they found her earring. That must be why they brought Ian in again, to identify it. She feels little prickles of moisture rise on her skin. She'd noticed, in the dark early hours of the morning, that she was missing an earring. She could have lost it anywhere, long before she went outside after Bradley. There had been no struggle. She'd lifted the boot scraper and brought it down on his head, and he'd dropped without a sound. But she was worried. What if she had lost the earring when she killed Bradley? Just in case, she removed the remaining earring when no one was watching and slipped it onto the end table beside her. Now she's glad she thought ahead. If they do have her earring, if they found it near Bradley, she will insist that she took both of them out before Riley ran outside and put them down on the little end table. The killer must have seen her do it. The killer must have taken one and deliberately planted it near Bradley's body. It's perfectly plausible, especially as they won't have any other evidence against her. It should be enough for reasonable doubt. They won't get anything out of her. Chapter 37, Sunday, 6 p.m. The road crews are out in force, plowing, sanding, and salting the roads. They will soon be able to let the survivors drive to the station in town to give their statements. Sergeant Sorensen has been advised by telephone that a detective will be arriving any minute. They've done pretty well so far, she thinks, without one. A technician approaches her, holding up a laptop. I was able to get past Candace White's password. I pulled up what she was working on. Sorensen raises her eyebrows. And? It looks like a romance novel about two women who fall in love and adopt a baby. Really? Sorensen says, surprised. He nods. Yep, have a look. Sunday, 6:30 p.m. Ian has been outside for the last half hour, running the cars, warming them up, and trying to scrape the ice off the windows. It's already dark out, but the hotel is brightly lit. Gwen stops on the front porch, looking out. Her car has just been pulled out of the ditch and brought back to Mitchell's Inn. It seems wrong to get back in the car without Riley. So horrible to leave without her, to abandon her here. She's still in the forest, with various people photographing her, examining her under floodlights. Gwen is sure she'll never forgive herself. She becomes aware of David coming up to stand beside her. She doesn't know what to say to him. Is there any future for the two of them? Immediately, she feels disloyal to Riley, to her memory. How resentful she would be. Gwen, David says, it's just the two of them on the porch. Are you okay? His genuine concern almost makes her break down. She wants to press her face into his chest, but she doesn't. Instead, she just nods quickly, blinking back tears. She turns to him suddenly. Did you suspect it was Lauren? Yes, he admits. She touched Dana, and she touched Candace, too, in front of everyone. It's a smart thing to do if you're worried about the possibility of having left trace evidence. It's very difficult to not leave forensic evidence. And she tried to get to Bradley, too, but I stopped her. Physically stopped her. That's when I suspected her. But I didn't know. Not for sure.
I had no idea it was Lauren, Gwen says.
She'd been shocked by Lauren's arrest. Ian whispered to her and David afterward that they'd found Lauren's earring outside and that he figured it had to have been near the murder scene because they'd quickly arrested her. David says, she didn't get near Bradley after we found him, so if they found her earring near him...
I liked her. I trusted her, Gwen says. She looks up at him in disbelief. Why would she do it?
What her reasons were, I have no idea. I imagine it will come out in the investigation. I suspect Bradley knew what was going on and that he was killed for it.
He looks down at her. His face serious.
I think Lauren is probably a psychopath, and very good at pretending that she isn't.
He hesitates.
They're different, you know. Not like you and me.
She looks at him more closely. He seems different than he did the first night they arrived. More weary, less sure of himself. They're all different. She wonders how she seems to him now, how she's changed. She knows that when she gets into her car, Riley will be in the passenger seat beside her, saying, he killed his wife. Stay away from him. Beverly walks slowly and sadly out the front door of the hotel, past David and Gwen, and down the steps. But Henry is still in the hotel, in his chair by the fire, as if he will never leave. It feels strange to leave without him, to leave him stuck there. But of course the coroner will have him taken away for an autopsy. There must be an autopsy. There will be arrangements to make, a funeral to see to. She thinks about how to tell the kids that their father is dead. It will come as a shock. You don't expect your parents to go away together for a weekend and only one of them to come back. But first, she must stop at the police station and give her statement. Then, they've been told, they will all be allowed to go home. All except Lauren. Matthew is getting into his car. His grief weighs him down. David and Gwen are still talking on the front porch. Beverly gets into her car,
backs up, and then turns slowly down the drive toward town and the police station. What a difference a weekend can make. She'd come up here in hopes of reconnecting with her husband. Now, she is going home a widow. She checks her rearview mirror to see if anyone is watching her. There's no one behind her, and no one can see her in the dark. Even so, she waits until she is around the first curve of the drive before she smiles. She feels so light, it's like she's floating. She thinks back to when they were searching the hotel, when she helped search the others' bags. She saw the drugs that Lauren had, the sleeping pills, an entire vial of them, full. After holding it up for all to see, no one had noticed her spill part of the bottle into her hand inside the overnight bag and then slip the pills into her pocket. It was dark, and no one was paying much attention. She hadn't known for sure that she would do it, not until Bradley had been killed too. And she hadn't known for sure if it would be enough. But she snuck the pills into her husband's scotch in the dark and hoped for the best. Perhaps, combined with all the scotch he'd been drinking, it would be enough. It was. She knows that the autopsy will show the sleeping pills, that he was murdered. But he will be one of four people murdered at Mitchell's Inn this weekend. And Lauren, the murderer of the other three, can't exactly say anything without implicating herself. She can't say, "But I didn't kill Henry." She can't say a thing. This is Hillary Huber. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of An Unwanted Guest by Sherry LaPena. This program was directed by Arthur G. Insana, Executive Producer, Orly Moskowitz. Text copyright 2018 by 1742145 Ontario Limited. Production copyright 2018, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.